Covering the Western Hockey League from south of the border, this is the U.S. Division Podcast. Welcome to the very first episode of the U.S. Division Podcast. My name is Scott Sepich. It is a 95-degree day here in Portland, Oregon. Not exactly hockey weather, but we are going to get right into it tonight. The WHL season is right around the corner. We're going to be doing a series of podcasts previewing each of the five teams here in the U.S. division. I'm going to start tonight with the Seattle Thunderbirds. I have Andy Ide, the T-Birds beat writer for 710sports.com, going to be joining me in a couple minutes. A little bit about myself in this podcast. I've been covering the Western Hockey League and the Portland Winterhawks for about 6 years now. Well, I've been following the league, though, since I was a little kid back in the early 80s, so my hope is to bring a little bit greater exposure to the five teams down here in the U.S. We're a little bit of a forgotten corner in the major junior hockey world sometimes, something that was hammered home to me when I was in Saskatoon covering the Winterhawks at the Memorial Cup in May. We learned just how little the junior hockey world seems to know about hockey in these parts. So I'm going to do my small part to maybe bring a little bit more attention to hockey in our neck of the woods. And I'm going to start with Andy tonight talking about the Thunderbirds, and we'll move on to each of the other four teams in the division. Follow along with us at the website. It's theusdivision.com. That is all one word, the U.S. division, no punctuation or anything like that, just theusdivision.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at ssepich, that's at S-S-E-P-I-C-H. You can email me at scott.sepich@gmail.com. If you have any feedback, any questions, any complaints, want to talk about anything, go ahead and drop me a line. For now, we're going to get right into it. He is a Seattle Thunderbirds beat writer for 710sports.com and a WHL writer for the Hockey Writers. Andy Ide, thanks for being my very first guest.
It's my pleasure, Scott. Thanks for having me.
This is either going to be the start of something big or something we're all going to laugh about in a few years, so let's see. Hopefully it's more of the latter. Or, sorry, more of the former, not the latter.
Maybe it'll be something big that we can also laugh
about. Yeah, we can laugh about it. It'll be something big we can laugh about. So
there you go.
So this is the first of a sort of a series of preview podcasts we're going to be doing for each team around the league. And I think my first burning question with the Seattle Thunderbirds this year is, are the fans in Seattle going to stick with Portland Cheats, or are they going to go back to Portland Sucks after every time the Thunderbirds score this year?
I think they've always will go back to what they know the best, and that's Portland Sucks.
Yeah.
We have fans who maybe not know the whole story with Portland, so I think Portland Sucks will still be the predominant cheer in the Schiller Center.
Yeah, I was impressed last year that some people did pick up on the Cheats part of it. I enjoyed that when I was up there last year.
And they were selling some Portland Cheats T-shirts too.
Yeah, obviously that was a big, very big deal when it first happened. Have the Seattle fans gotten over that yet, or is that something they're going to hold over the Winterhawks for a while here?
I think they enjoy it. I think they'll hold on to it, especially when Portland is the better team and has been handing it to Seattle on a somewhat regular basis. I think it's nice to fall back on and say, well, oh yeah, but they cheated. So I don't think it's going to go away. I think it'll go away once Seattle starts beating Portland on a more, when the teams become even, you might see that go away.
And it's funny, these teams have not really been on an even keel for several years, because the last few years, obviously, Portland's been better. And before that, Seattle was a lot better. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since they've been, I guess you could say, real rivals. I think maybe going back to when they played in the playoffs in, that was 2006, they went to seven games. Really hasn't been that much of a series since then.
Yeah, it hasn't. With that being said, though, I still think it's one of the better rivalries in the league. I don't know of any other two WHL teams where the fan bases seem to really like to go at it. And, I just sense that even though there's turnover every year, it just seems like both the kids from both clubs get up for each other. Even though it's been one-sided, it would really be fun to see the two of them kind of battling down the stretch. I think that would just add to what's already a pretty good rivalry.
And sort of, I think there's probably some excitement on the Seattle end for the first, well, I mean, not the first time, but certainly it's been a few years since there's been as much maybe promise going into a season for the Thunderbirds. I want to go back and revisit a little bit the end of last year. You know, the end of the season was such a weird series. I mean, I think most people kind of thought Kelowna would win four games in a row in that series. They didn't think that they would do that after losing the first three, though. So, what was it like to watch that series from your end and everything that kind of transpired? And even though the result ended up being the team everybody thought, it really was a pretty big growing experience for the Thunderbirds.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to cover. You know, it seven games, five of them went into overtime. A sixth was a one goal game. There's only one game that was more than one goal. That was game four, which Kelowna won 4-0, I believe, in Seattle. So I mean, every game was exciting. Seattle had their chances. You know, game six, Luke Lockhart hit the post in overtime, which would have won it. Then up in game seven, he had a good chance again in overtime. So yeah, it was really fun to watch and really exciting, and nobody gave them a chance. I felt like they might win one just because they had played Kelowna pretty well at home during the regular season. Not so much up there. I guess nobody really did up in Kelowna. It was shocking. You know, Kelowna had almost doubled them in points in the standings and scored over 100 goals more than Seattle had. So they really, It was a surprise that they got up 3-0. It was a surprise that they won the first two in Kelowna. Kelowna's home record was so good. Going into that, I give a lot of credit to Steve Konowalczyk, the head coach. You know, I interviewed him just before that series started, and his mantra throughout the whole series was that they weren't too concerned about the results. He just wanted the guys to go out there and play hard, play the right way, give it, you know, just put everything on the line with nothing to lose and have fun. And that's what they did. You know, they all knew that they were the huge underdogs and that they probably weren't going to win, but he convinced them to just not worry about that, just go out and work hard and see what happens. And I think that is a lot. That's a lot of the reason why they had the early success in that series. And you know, talking to the players coming back, I think that you know, getting a taste of success, a taste of, you know, winning some games for the first time for most of that group, I think it did do a lot for them coming into this year. They also, you know, got a little bit of the bitterness of the heartbreak. And so I think that also is fueling them coming into this season.
Yeah, I mean, the way that series ended with, it was Lockhart that scored with, 7 seconds left in regulation of game seven to send it to overtime. And then to lose it. I mean, I'm sure that as much as you want to have fun and learn from that, it was, the expectations might have changed when they won the first three games of that series. How down were they afterwards, and were they able to put into perspective what, you know, they had done a lot?
They were pretty down, I think. I think it really did burn a little bit that, you know, they had a chance to do something historic, you know, at least from a statistical standpoint. People were saying it would have been one of the biggest upsets in the history of the league. I think they were really down. I think it hurt to come that close and know that they had the lead. You know, it would have been different if it was a back and forth, one team won one game, one team won another. You know, but when you're up 3-0, you know, only one other team had ever done it before and come back from that. So, it did sting. But I think they've all been spinning it in a positive way that, you know, that they're going to use that as motivation.
And talk about, you know, I watched every game of that series online. And game three, I believe, was when they had a sellout crowd at Showware. Mm-hmm. And I was watching it on the computer, but it seemed like that might have been the defining moment so far since the T-Birds have moved to Kent. It seemed like that building was just crazy that night. Can you describe what it was like there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was loud from the start. You know, they were up 2-0 coming in. It was the first win that they've had, a playoff win that they've had in that building. You know, and after 3 years of not making the playoffs, the crowd just, you know, ate it up. It was also $2 beer night.
yeah, that helps.
So, I think that also helped a little bit with the crowd being rowdy. But, you know, after talking to players after the game, they really were blown away by it. You know, it's the loudest the building had been all year. It's probably the loudest any of them had ever heard that building. Some of the players who played elsewhere said they hadn't heard any other buildings that loud in the league. And I think it gave you a glimpse of what the atmosphere could be like there if they had a team on the ice that was in the hunt for things on a more regular basis.
Yeah, so kind of using that to delve into this year's team. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the expectations here? Obviously, I assume a step forward, but is it a step forward to you know, maybe a little bit higher playoff positioning, or is this a team that maybe can be in the mix at a, you know, top four or so finish in the West?
Yeah, I think they would like to have home ice advantage in the first round, so that would mean top four finish. I think that's how the team sees themselves. I think that's what they would consider a successful season. You know, they took the step last year, making the playoffs. UConn and Walter won a winning record last year. Didn't get that, but he was happy with the last home stretch of the season and then the playoff series. So this year, you know, I've heard them talking about wanting that, at least that fourth seed. So that's kind of their goal. I don't know that they see themselves this year as a contender in the West. It's for the, you know, for the top seed in the West. I think they might be looking a year or two away from that being a realistic goal, but this year I think that's what they want. They want to say that they took the next step, which is to get at least the fourth seed.
And I look at the roster. I got the roster up in front of me right now, and I know that the big question mark is goaltending. And how is that overblown, or is that a real concern? And are they comfortable going into the season with a guy like Devin Fordyce as the starter?
They say that they're comfortable with what they have. I'm trying to gauge whether or not that's just what they say to not hand kind of trade. And you know, Fordyce is there. I thought maybe had the lead going into the training camp just because of his age. But after seeing a few games, I actually would give the nod right now to Justin Miles as having the better shot to have the number one slot. He's looked a little better, a little more steady. And he made the team last year. He was Brandon Glover's backup and played pretty well in limited action, you know, and then got hurt and missed the rest of the season, which is the second time in a row that he's missed the majority of the season. So the big question mark with him, I think they like him. I think he looks like he could be a good goaltender. It's just, can you trust that he's going to, you know, is he durable enough to play a full season? We just don't know. And that's kind of the scouting point on all their goaltenders. I think they like them. I think that they could be good goaltenders, but none of them have, you know, more than just four or five games worth of a WHL experience. So you really don't know. Fordyce was with Prince George at the beginning of the season, actually beat Seattle on the third or fourth game of the year. Got released by Prince George, went back to tier two and had put up some pretty good numbers down there. And so, you know, he's, I believe, 19. So my thinking was that he might be somebody who they keep around just because of his age. So if I were a betting person, I would say Miles and Fordyce for now. I know Danny Mumaw, they really like. They like his attitude. He's a hard worker. He might be just a little bit behind him. And then they have a young goaltender, a 16-year-old, Logan Flodell, who looks really good. I mean, he might be a little too young now, but he's I think, in the next year or two, the goaltender of the future for the club.
Yeah, and with Devin Fordyce, interesting that they acquired him actually in the Bantam draft this year.
Yeah, that's correct. Apparently, that threw me as a surprise, too. Apparently, the rule is if a player has been released, you can, in the Bantam draft, you have to take him around after where he was originally selected. So Seattle picked him up.
Yeah, I remember when that came across I was following the Bantam draft, and I saw that name, and I said, I think he's already in the league. Did they already go?
Yeah, like I said, he beat Seattle up in PG early in the season.
Right. Yeah, I remember seeing him at least once down in Portland with the Cougars, so I know he's had some experience. You know, the goaltending thing, get that sorted out. Pretty big crew of returning players otherwise. A lot of experience, and some guys, you know, like Brandon Truk, who has really not been able to play a whole lot because of injuries. Maybe he could stay healthy. It looks like they have a pretty good core coming back. What do you expect out of the forward and the defense group this year?
Yeah, I think the forwards, you know, they did back the majority of their top scorers from last year. And if Truk can stay healthy, he's probably their most talented offensive player. They just haven't able to get him in there and work him in and get some chemistry. But if he can stay healthy, they have the potential to have two pretty solid lines that could cause some matchup trouble. Of course, Matt Barthel, big rookie, is also in that mix. I'm curious to see what line he's going to play on. So far in training camp and in the preseason, he's been playing with Robert Lisberg and Justin Hickman. And they've looked really, really good, like they've already had some chemistry together. And if that's your, if that's a line, that sets up a potential second line of Alec Delamoff and Connor Honey and Brandon Truk, which is a pretty good second line for them, or first line, however you want to call it, 1A or 1A. So they could have the potential to start rolling some pretty good lines and cause some matchup problems for their opponents up front.
I know Barzal is number one overall pick, right, in the Bantam draft.
Yeah, he was.
So he comes in pretty, you know, pretty heralded rookie. Is he the kind of guy that can just step in and be that big-time contributor right away, big-time scorer right away, or is he going to maybe take a little bit longer like most 16-year-olds?
He sure looks like he's ready to go. You know, we saw him in training camp last year at 15 and thought he could score in the league at 15. And, you know, so far in the preseason, he looks like he's the real deal. He's got high hockey IQ, he's got good vision, he's got great hands. He always seems to find open space. Puck seems to find him. I think he's going to be the real deal. I've read some people trying to figure out how many points he's going to score. There's some guys, national guys in Canada who are predicting he's going to be a point per game player. I think the idea of him on a power play with Shea Theodore is something that would be entertaining to watch. I think Barzal's going to have an impactful season for him. And he could end up being their top forward. Wouldn't be shocking if he was.
Seth Swenson's a guy that we used to have here in Portland, came up to Seattle mm-hmm. a couple years ago. He really took off, I think, when he first got there. And then his production was decent last year, but maybe it slowed a little bit. He's coming in as an overager now. Is he kind of an X factor for this team if he can become a big-time goal scorer?
Yeah, he seems like a guy who has the potential to do that. He's got really good hands. He's got good size. He really, last year, even though his goal scoring went down a little bit, he really turned into a really effective penalty killer, too. I'm curious if you were kind of Walchuk uses him. Does he use him as a shutdown kind of guy on a shutdown line where he won't get as many scoring opportunities? But he's a good kid. He plays hard. I think they like what he brings. I think he's good in the room. But you watch him play and you think, boy, he seems like he should be scoring more. So maybe at 20 he starts to do that. That definitely would be an added bonus to them. I do think a lot of their returning players, you know, Connor Honey could take another step forward too, is another guy. So I think they should score more goals than they have in the years past.
And then they have a pretty experienced defensive group, even though it's still maybe young in age. They've played quite mm-hmm. a bit. Shea Theodore, obviously, is sort of the star of the bunch, and I really like him. I've always kind of thought that he reminds me, just in the way he skates, the way he moves, of a little bit of Seth Jones. What do you expect from Theodore this year? Is he going to be one of the top defensemen in the league, you think?
Yeah, I think he should be. I mean, I think the big knock on him last year was he wasn't overly physical on his own end, and so he needed to work on that. He did seem in training camp to be throwing his weight around a little bit more, so that was a good sign. But he's an elite skater. He's got excellent vision. He will often time, you know, display this end-to-end rush and has everybody on the edge of their seat. And last year he came in with a much improved slap shot. His rookie year, He hardly ever shot it, and he only scored four or five goals, I think, and, you know, didn't shoot. It wasn't very accurate. And last year, he really, he showed that he developed that, and his goal scoring went up, and, you know, he was manning the point on the power play. And so I would imagine that would just, he was just build on that even more this year. He's fun to watch just because he just is such a smooth skater. He really, he jumps out at it. If you didn't know who he was, when he was, you soon would figure it out just by watching them play.
Yeah, there's a lot of height, a lot of size in the defensive group.
Yes.
And that's something that, you know, against some of the teams, you know, a team like Portland has a lot of smaller, faster guys. Are they going to try to use that size this year to slow some teams down?
Yeah, they really are. You know, Jared Hoff is one of those guys who really had a great second half of the season last year. I think his overall number was still in a plus-minus number, but the last, I don't know, month, 2 months of the season, he was a plus or even player. He seems to really have learned how to use his height, you know, and use angles, use his stick and his reach to slow guys down. And I think what they did against Kelowna, who's not as physical, the faster team than they are, may go a long way into how the defensive unit plays, because they really did bang Kelowna pretty good for those seven games. You know, Kelowna survived the series, but they were limping afterwards. You know, and they got swept in the second round by Kamloops. And a lot of that, I think, had to do with just how much Seattle warmed down. And so I think that's their MO against some of those teams that are speedier. They're going to try and bang them. You know, they've got the defense to do it, and even some of their forwards are pretty good size too. And so Seattle should be a tough team to play against just from that standpoint. But that Portland still is a tough matchup for them just because of the speed, especially that top line with Patan and Leipzig.
Yeah, I know Jesse Forsberg became sort of a public enemy number one down here last year. Mm-hmm. With some of the he seemed to embrace it, though. He seemed to play to the crowd. He was really kind of enjoying being the villain almost down here. Do they need a little bit more of that sort of attitude of not backing down from these teams that have been beating them up the last few years?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I talked to Connor Walczyk before last season and asked him specifically about Portland. And, you know, I think he, at that point, he said that he felt that the year before they had given Portland too much respect. You know, he said, you still have to respect who you're playing, but, you know, he thought that they just kind of stood around too much and, you know, with a deer in the headlights kind of look, watching Portland run around. And so he promised that they would play them a little tougher. And I think you saw some of that last year against Portland. I think they also allowed Portland to get under their skin a lot. You know, there were a number of games, especially in Portland, where Seattle was with them for, you know, I don't know, first period and a half. And Portland might have got a lead, and Seattle, for some reason, it just, their psyche would crumble, and they would start running around and you know, seem to be more interested in you know, getting payback for some things. So I think if they can land somewhere in the middle of, you know, not respecting them too much, but then not also, you know, losing their composure, I think they might have a better run against Portland this year. Because they definitely were in more of those games, you know, and they won opening night, they won another one later on. So I think it'll be interesting to see how much that gap is closed, and if Seattle has more confidence now playing against the Winterhawks, or they haven't, this group at least hasn't in the past.
Yeah, a couple of years ago when I was up in that show where I interviewed Calvin Pickard, and, you know, one of the things that we talked about and kind of got across to me was that, you know, things hadn't been going well for that organization for a few years, and that they had to start to actually believe in themselves that they could, you know, turn things around and get better and not have this defeatist attitude that has sort of been permeating things for a few years there. And I know that talking to Steve Konowalczyk, that seems to be a big part of his mission, is to actually build some belief and, like you say, not give too much respect to these teams that have been beating them down the last few years.
Yeah, you know, he talked to, you know, I did a kind of postseason chat with him after the playoff series. And he, you know, they went through a horrible, miserable 15-game losing streak just after,
right
before Christmas and into January. And, you know, before that, they had played pretty well. You know, the first part of the season, they were, I think, just a game or two above 500, and they were competing. They had beaten a lot of the better teams in the league. And he told me that the hard part about that losing streak was he felt like that some of that loser mentality kind of started creeping back in. And that was a little bit of a worry. He really felt that they were better than how they were performing. But that, you know, that group had lost so much that when a couple things go wrong, they just kind of slip right back into that. He was encouraged by, you know, after they broke that losing streak and that they battled down the stretch, and well, they weren't, you know, winning every game. They did enough, and, you know, every game was, yeah, half a man on the line to make the playoffs, and they got in the playoffs and also got into the seventh seed instead of the eighth seed. And then the way they competed in the playoffs, he felt like they, in some ways, that losing streak might have helped, you know, make them a better team. They kind of came together and survived it and had some success afterwards.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if that mentality carries over. I talked to their trainer at training camp, Phil Varney, who, if you ever get a chance to talk to, is quite the character. I would recommend talking to him.
Right.
But he said that he's, in the 6 years he's been with the team, he's never seen a team come in this good of shape. And it really feels like that the way the season ended kind of really did motivate those guys to go home and come back, you know, just better shape, stronger. So it's going to be interesting to see So it's interesting to see how they come out of the gates and then what they do, you know, after maybe losing a couple games in a row. See how they respond to some adversity.
Now, I know you were up in Everett for the opening preseason tournament, and I believe at that point most teams had pretty much their full rosters. That was before the NHL training camps had started. What did you see just from all the teams that were there? What were your impressions from that first weekend?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The one team that didn't bring a lot of their regulars was Spokane, who left all their overagers at home for some reason, and didn't win a game in the tournament. So
yeah.
I also think Spokane may be the team that takes the biggest step back in this division. So, but yeah, you know, it was funny. I was curious to watch Portland because I wanted to see I'm curious to see who Mike Johnson is going to replace Ty Ratty with on that top line. You know, I think a lot of people, myself included, just assumed it would be Oliver Bjorkstrand. He just seemed like that kind of player and that he's got the speed and can fit right in with there. But he actually, the three games that I saw of him was Alex Shainbourne who played with him. And they didn't seem to miss too much of a beat. They were still scoring like crazy. They were dangerous every time they were on the ice. So I don't know if that's who Portland's going to go with long-term on that line, but he sure seemed like he was a good early start to that. And then I was also curious to see Portland's defense because they have a lot of turnover there. And their Euro that they brought in, Anton Cederholm, sure made an impression. He, you know, he's a really big physical player, and he was throwing his body around, and he delivered one of the biggest hits I've ever seen where he sent a kid from, I believe it was Victoria, just head over heels. And so he's going to be an interesting one to watch. The Tri-City, you know, Eric, I was curious to see how Eric Comrie looked coming off the hip surgery, and he looked to be just the same Eric Comrie that he was, you know, before he got hurt. So I think he'll have another good season. I'm not sure about the rest of Tri-City. I am curious to see how Tyler Vickerman does with them, who's a kid from Kennewick, who was with Vancouver last year briefly and wanted to be closer to home.
Yeah.
And see what kind of boost he gives Tri-City. And then Everett. Everett's a curious team, too. I think, you know, it's hard to get a read on what Everett's going to be. They have a really good goaltender. They have a goaltender I think is really underrated. I know Portland fans saw him steal two games in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everett probably had no business winning if it weren't for off the mop. And the Kevin Constantine's now their coach, you know, and he's always been a defensive coach. So that should help lots. You know, the big question with them is do they have the scoring? And they've been scoring goals in the preseason, but it's hard to say if that's real or not, you know, because you are playing against rosters that, you know, they play a lot of rookies sometimes. And so it's hard to see. You know, they've got also a situation where they have three Europeans right now. And a decision's going to have to be made. You know, they're allowed to have three for a while Mirko Mueller is in San Jose's camp. So they brought in Valtteri Haapanen and even Niko Lehtinen, both of who look to be really good offensive players. So it would be a surprise if Mueller sticks with San Jose. So when he comes back, either they trade Mirko Mueller or send one of those other guys home, which seems really weird that they would do. I can't imagine any of those prospects making much sense to them.
Right.
So it's going to be curious. It's going to be interesting to watch what they do. But they should have some more offense. You know, Tyler Sandu is a good player. And then they always might get Kara back from the Oilers too. If he fell on their lap, they could be a team to watch as well. Overall though, I think it's Portland's division still. I think it'll come a little harder than maybe it came last year. But I don't know that they'll be seriously challenged. I think the real interesting battle will be who comes in second.
Yeah, and like you said, Spokane might be the team that takes the biggest step back this year. Then you don't know with Tri-City where they're going to get goals from. And the thing that was interesting about Everett to me was, you know, Gary Davidson came in and it sounded like he got rid of Mark Ferner. I think what I thought it was because he wanted to have more of an up-tempo, exciting offensive style.
Yes.
And then he hired Kevin Constantine to coach them now, which is a little bit at odds with that. But at the same time, I was reading some quotes from Everett players the other day saying that Constantine is encouraging them to shoot the puck a lot and really go at the net. And so, like you said, it's going to be interesting to see what they do exactly, because I know that Constantine is well known in these parts for icing the puck like 22 times in a row. So
yes, exactly. And
that kind of goes against what maybe his the roster that they're trying to build there would be doing.
Yeah, you know, I think Everett in many ways is the biggest mystery in the division. You know, I think Seattle has some question marks in goal, and Tri-City has some question marks, you know, as far as offense goes. But you can kind of see that both two teams, I think they have a plan maybe, and just will it work is the question. But Everett just seems to be kind of a really big unknown, you know, a lot, especially because I don't think their roster is close to being set yet with the European situation. I think they still have four 20-year-olds, if I'm not mistaken, on their roster. So there's still a lot of questions there with Everett and what they're going to be. And, you know, they're averaging 5 goals a game in the preseason. You know, one of their players is leading the league in the preseason scoring. But again, I just don't know how real that is. Right. Especially since they scored 12 goals in Tri-City tournament this weekend. But a lot of the teams that were there, you know, most of those teams didn't have any of their pro guys were all in camp. So I don't know if you can really judge that as an accurate, you know, showing.
Yeah, I know they beat Portland 8-2.
Yeah, but again, it was. Team with that, yeah, no Rag or no Burke, no Patan and Leipzig, right? They were
yeah,
all gone.
Right. I think Chase Delia was the best player they had in uniform that night. So so it's really hard, I guess, to know too much in the preseason. When you look at them, every team still has to make some cuts. The T-Birds do have a few new faces. I know that. I think Kolasar and Bear, you think, are both going to make the team?
I think Kolasar will. I think, you know, you want your first-round draft picks to make the team at 16. He was, you know, Barzal got all the attention as being the number one overall pick, but Kolasar was also a first-rounder. In a trade they got for, you mentioned Seth Swenson before. That was part of the Seth Swenson trade. That was Portland's pick. They had another one this year. I think he'll make the team. Bear is a really good-looking player. They have a pretty deep defense. I think what it'll come down to is whether or not they feel he will develop more at the WHL level, practicing and getting in some games, or if he's going to develop more going back home and playing regular. But he sure is a good-looking player. You know, he's got good size. He can skate. And, you know, all the scouting reports on him say he's not very much of an offensive player. But what I've seen, he's got a shot that, you know, 99% of the time seems to be on net. And it seems to be pretty hard. And a lot of 16-year-old defensemen don't seem to have very developed slap shots, and he seems to be ahead of that. So he's a player that I really like. And whether it's this year or next year, I think he's gonna be somebody that's gonna fill in on their defense.
Yeah. And other than Barzal, are there any other new faces who might be able to make an impact?
They have a little center, Scott Ensor, who they picked up from Colorado. He's 17-year-old. He has the potential, I think, to be a really kind of annoying penalty killer and forechecker, and maybe be a shutdown center. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on their third or fourth line or their defensive line. He sure does. He skates hard. He's not going to be a big goal scorer, but he skates hard, and he seems like he'd be annoying to play against. And so I think he's going to have an impact, not from goals again, but just from, you know, what he brings. You know, he might fill some of the void that they lost with Luke Lockhart as far as, you know, winning faceoffs and playing defense.
You know, one thing I just finished a story for the Oregonian here about how the Winterhawks have been successful in landing a lot of American players over the last few years, and I know Tri-City is going to actually have, I think, maybe more than Portland this year. They might have 10 on the roster this year. The T-Birds do have a handful. Do you get a sense that that's a market that they are trying to tap into, being a U.S.-based team, or have they really not gone too far that direction yet?
I don't know that they've made a concerted effort to do that. I think, you know, I think they, if they can find an American player who's good, I think they would definitely jump at that. You know, they, like, I think three or four of those players all played the same Colorado program. You know, Seth Swenson, Griffin Falk, and Danny Muma and Enzer all play for the Colorado Thunderbirds, which is just a coincidence that the names are the same. But which is one of the top Bantam programs in the country. But I, you know, I've never heard them say that they're specifically looking to bring in American players. So I don't know that they've really gone to look for that. And I think they're just finding the best guys.
It's interesting that you guys actually have a New Year's Eve game this year. There.
Yeah, that's the whole WHL, what the computer schedule, I do the schedule this year instead of humans doing the schedule. So that got thrown out. And Seattle's neutral swing is broken in half. They go early for like half the games, and then they go back later, which I think they're annoyed by.
Portland's doing that too.
Yeah, I think none of them like that. But so Seattle hosts Kamloops on New Year's Eve instead of going to Portland. So that's going to be a strange thing to see.
Yeah, when I came, it's been like they've been here like 15 years in a row or something like that.
Yeah. And I also noticed that usually, like I know last year, all the Seattle games in Portland were in the Rose Garden or whatever. What's it called now? It's not the Rose Garden.
It's called the Moda Center now, yes.
The Moda Center. Yeah, every time I see that, I'm like, what's that? I'm not used to it
yet. Right, yeah.
But I noticed that half the games this year are in the Memorial Coliseum, so that's interesting.
Yeah, they're playing, the Hawks are playing the first 12 home games at the Moda Center. And then only six more after that.
Is that just the way the schedule worked, or is that the Trailblazers, or?
Yeah, most of them, they're trying to get in before the Blazer season started and get some, they have trouble, you know, I think this probably happens at all the teams, especially in the U.S., like they have trouble drawing early season because of
football,
high school football, college football.
Yeah,
and they feel like if they have some more games at the nicer arena, that maybe they can draw some more people in.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But then it leaves you with some games late in the season that are, you know, bigger games at the Coliseum, and it's not as much of a draw, but...
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Well, I know one thing I do respect is, you know, up here in Seattle, people were griping that the Basketball Hall of Fame ceremony where Gary Payton was getting inducted was Sunday morning, the same exact time the Seahawks were playing.
That's right, yeah.
And so people were like, who planned that, you know?
Who planned that, right?
But I do respect that the WHL on Super Bowl Sunday just doesn't schedule any games. I think they know, at least not in the U.S. division. I know none of the U. I don't think any of the U.S. division teams played on Super Bowl Sunday last year. As somebody who goes to all the home games, I appreciated that.
Do they play on, I'm trying to remember if they play on the Grey Cup day either. I don't think they do.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I tune into that as much, but yeah, I remember people were like, oh, you probably can't go to the Super Bowl party, right? Because you got to cover the Chiefs. I'm like, nope, the league. Yeah. And I know that somebody from the Chiefs was telling me back in 2005 when Seattle, the Seahawks were in the NFC Championship game, that Seattle was scheduled to play, was it Everett or Sox? I forget who they had a home game with, and both teams decided to move it to the next night.
Wow.
I think they figured that nobody was going to come in Seattle for this game.
I saw a YouTube clip today of a Portland-Seattle game from 1990.
Somebody showed me that too. Yeah, it was only like half of the first period. Or something,
it was like 11.
Right?
Yeah, it was like a 10-minute clip, but it was TSN's game of the week.
Yeah,
from 1990. Yeah, I didn't even know that happened. Like, and obviously that wasn't on in Seattle or Portland.
No, it wasn't at all. Yeah, I had a friend back then who lived in Vancouver, and I didn't know about that either. And I went to visit him once, and it was on a Sunday, and we were at a bar. And I looked up and like Spokane was playing somebody. I'm like, they're showing a WHL game on TV. Like that just blew my mind. And he's like, oh yeah, every Sunday night they show a WHL game. But that might have been before TSN had the NHL like they do now too. So I don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, I thought that was funny. I was like, I never seen.
Yeah.
There was a Portland Lethbridge game that was also on YouTube, and and that was a bad. Well, 1990 was a really good time for the Thunderbirds and a really terrible time for the Warhawks.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that team this year was really good. Yeah.
Yeah, when I watched that, I said, oh, yeah, Gervais, Goodall, and...
Yep, and Nedved was on that team.
I was like, wow, that was a pretty good team.
Yeah. Peter Anholt coached that team. He's now a scout for the Thunderbirds.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was here for camp. He scouts at WHL for him. Like, that's kind of his niche. He doesn't scout Phantom players. He's scouting the rest of the league, you know, so when it comes to trades and stuff. But yeah, I talked to him briefly at that camp, and he talked about how different the game is then. You know, that team had like 3 40 goal scorers on it or something like that. You know, a couple 50 goal scorers. And he's like, you're not going to see that now. I mean, not very often.
Yeah, it was a different.
Well, you look, up and down.
You look at the goalie, and they like they're barely wearing any equipment. It looks like compared to what they wear now. So
yeah. And they weren't as big back then. You know.
That's.
I think you have to be over 6 feet now to be a really good goalie.
That Seattle Portland game. Who was Seattle's goalie in 1990?
Danny Lorenz.
Danny Lorenz. Really yeah, Byron yeah. Defoe. Byron Defoe was Portland's goalie at that point.
yep. I remember Byron Defoe, yeah.
Which is funny.
I saw that clip, but I was like, I told somebody, I'm like, there's a 99% chance I was at that game. that season, I went to almost every game, that 90 season, 1991. And that's the year before Connor Walchuk got there. I thought it would be cool if Connor Walchuk was on that Portland team in that clip, but I think that was the year before he got there.
Yeah,
it would have been kind of cool to see that because I vaguely remember him playing for Portland, but it would have been kind of cool to see. It would have looked weird.
Yeah, I remember asking him about. I mean, I'm sure everybody was talking about that when he first got the job. What's it going to be like facing Portland when that was a team you played? And I remember him saying that it was weird the first game. He said the first game it was weird. And then by the second game, they were starting to piss me off. So like,
I think he's into the rivalry now from the other side. I think they piss him off.
I've talked to a couple of different players who play, who are from Canada but play on U.S. teams, and they say it's just so different. Like, the fans are just so much more rabid about their team and the rivalries in our division than they are up there, because it's almost like. People up there are more like they have their NHL teams they're fans of, and then they go to the junior game because it's fun,
And to see the players and the game.
It's more of like, oh, we're fans of hockey. We go to the game. We follow the team. But it's not like here where it's so like.
Yeah, it's your team.
It's your team. It's so important. And like people take it so seriously. And
yeah, I've heard that from players too. I think that's like, especially after that game three, a lot of them said, I don't think that WHL rings gets us loud in Canada.
Yeah.
and those crowds in Portland in the finals. It was night and day. It was night and day when they would go to Edmonton. And, in that Seattle-Kelowna series, that game three, which was sold out because it was $2 beer night.
Yeah.
And it was also 2-for-1 ticket night. The next night, the crowd was about half the size. And it almost had the atmosphere of a preseason game. I mean, there just was no energy from the start of the game at all, from the stands or anything. And Connor Walchuk told me they knew it was going to be a smaller crowd, and he really tried to tell his players, we got to find ways to get energy. Yesterday was easy, but today you got to find ways to get that to come with that energy. And I think it drained him a little bit.
Yeah, they got shut out that game, didn't they?
Yep, 4-0. That was the biggest.
That was an ugly game. I remember watching that one.
And it was like 3-0 early.
Yeah,
I think Kelowna went up 3-0 in the first, and Seattle just never recovered. And that's also the game they lost Connor Honey on that. Where he checking from behind play where he got suspended.
Right,
that hurt him. Then they lost Hickman, a couple games later for the same thing. So yeah, and that whole thing where. Honey didn't get suspended until it was known that player wasn't coming back. I forget who he hit. And then he gets suspended. That always irritates me. It's like, if you didn't think the hit was worthy of suspension, just on the merit of a hit.
They've been doing that forever, though. I hate that, too.
I know.
It's always like...
It's like either it's suspendable or it's not. Whether the kid got hurt, it shouldn't matter, right?
Because the idea should be to get rid of the bad hit. Like, if the hit's bad, and you get lucky enough that the guy's not hurt, then you shouldn't just get off, get away with it because of that,
Exactly. So if you didn't think the hit was bad, when it first happened, I mean, he got penalized. I think he got 5 minutes for it, but... And then there was a very similar hit, I forget which game it was, where Hawk got hit by a Kelowna player, very similar, and the guy just got 2 minutes. I know Connor Walchuk wasn't too pleased with that, because he said, I got the same explanation from the ref that he gave me for Honey's hit. Our guy gets suspended, their guy gets 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So that didn't make him happy.
All right,
well, yeah.
I guess I'll probably
get jamming.
I'm going to go eat dinner, so.
All right, enjoy.
Well, thanks for doing this.
Hey, no problem. It's a pleasure. Anytime.
I'll probably see you here or up there at some point this season. So.
Yeah, I plan on getting down there as much as I can. If it's usually Saturday games, I try to come down.
All right, cool.
So.
All right, I'll see you later.
Bye.
Once again, big thanks to Andy Iatt for joining me for this very first episode of the podcast. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Iatt. That's at AndyEide. You can also read his stuff about the Thunderbirds at 710sports.com. Thanks again for joining us on this very first episode. We'll see you next time on the US Division Podcast.